This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. Last Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Democratic Party court appointees and secretaries of state do not have the authority to deny the candidacy of politicians seeking federal office. Nowhere in the High Court's majority opinion was the word democracy mentioned. The liberal members of the court did say, although siding with the majority, that, quote, the American people have the power to vote for and elect candidates for national office, and that is a great and glorious thing. The men who drafted and ratified the 14th Amendment, however, had witnessed an insurrection and rebellion to defend slavery. They wanted to ensure that those who had participated in that insurrection and in possible future insurrections could not return to prominent roles. Today, the majority goes beyond the necessities of this case to limit how Section 3 can bar an oath-breaking insurrectionist from becoming president, unquote. Actually, the 14th Amendment Section 3 specifically pertains to officials of the Confederate government. Trump, as you no doubt know, like most of us, was not around back then. Confederate General Robert E. Lee, like most Confederates, may be gone, but a living institution tied by rusting chains to the evil institution of slavery and racist Jim Crow laws is the Democratic Party. The majority opinion also failed to note a glaring evil inherent in the Colorado Supreme Court's decision to ban Trump from the state's ballot. At no time has Trump been charged with, tried for, or convicted of committing insurrection. Colorado's High Court appointed itself prosecutor, presiding judge, and convicting jury. And yet, no mention of this dangerous judicial overreach was addressed in last Monday's ruling. Why? In fact, no one involved in the peaceful January 6 protest on Capitol Hill has been charged with the crime of insurrection. The only one convicted without benefit of trial as an insurrectionist is Trump, by activist judges across the country. A point made approvingly by activist attorney Ron Fine, whose successful challenge to Trump's appearing on the Illinois ballot admitted to the politicized corruption of blue state courts to CBS News.
But it is clear at this point that states cannot be the forum for these challenges going forward. And so, for example, in Illinois, where Trump appealed our decision, our victory in the Illinois courts ruling that he's disqualified, unfortunately, that case is not going to be able to move forward. The most important point, though, is that on the books, it remains as a matter of record that courts in every state that considered the merits ruled that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection and is disqualified. And all the Supreme Court has done today is said that states can't decide that through state court systems. But the Supreme Court refused to say that Trump didn't engage in insurrection.
The ruling throws the issue into the arms of Congress, which the ruling says is the only entity with the power to declare Trump an insurrectionist. On the singular point of insurrection, the High Court agreed to hear Trump's legal challenge to his impending D.C. trial for allegedly inciting the so-called riotous insurrection of January 6, 2021. The point of contention is Trump's claim of executive immunity. The Supreme Court stay of the trial means that should the court rule against the former president, his insurrection prosecution would begin sometime near the end of the 2024 presidential campaign, not nearly enough time for a kangaroo court to convict and imprison Trump before he takes the oath of office for a second term as chief executive. This has put Democrats and their amen corner in the mainstream media into something of a panic. MSNBC's Rachel Maddow says if Trump wins this November, he'll have to declare himself president for life to avoid overzealous prosecutions in the future.
The idea that they're going to side with him on immunity is unthinkable and also beside the point. The conclusion that we can arrive at now based on what they have done without having to wait for the ruling is that they are ensuring that Trump will not face trial. And when they inevitably rule that presidents aren't immune from prosecution after they leave office, what that will tell Donald Trump, if by then he is president, is that he can never leave the office of the presidency. Right. And if he is voted out in 2028, he cannot leave office, and he is willing to he is welcome to commit any crimes he wants to as long as he is still president, in order to ignore the result of that election and stay in power for life, because otherwise he is going to go to prison when he gets out. That is the way this is going to go.
In her hysteria, Maddow forgets an important point. We know there's no question that after his second term, Trump would continue to face an endless string of prosecutions. But he doesn't have to live up to the comic book scenarios of Trump-deranged Democrats and the press. He simply can pardon himself before exiting the Oval Office. And while he's at it, every January 6 protester imprisoned unjustly. Trump takes the slings and arrows hurled at him by a corrupt judicial system in stride, and continues campaigning to great success. A joint New York Times-Siena College poll finds Trump leading the doddering, gaffe-prone Joe Biden by 4 points. As Politico notes, quote, "The poll reflects a downsizing in Biden's favorability just 9 months before the 2024 presidential elections, as the president faces mounting questions about his advanced age, attacks on immigration issues, and growing frustration over his handling of the war in Gaza," unquote. Under the old rubric that says bad publicity is better than no publicity, Trump's legal problems have not detracted at all from his political appeal. That's because Americans remain undistracted from the terrible job Biden has done as president. In fact, Trump's unflappable nature and the bounce in his step stand in stark contrast to Biden's mental fog, verbal gaffes, and awkwardly weak gait. This has caused some to insist we shouldn't believe our eyes where Biden is concerned, like the disgraced and recently impeached Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
He is sharp, intensely probing, and detail-oriented and focused.
For his part, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Charles Q. Brown, told NBC's Lester Holt that his commander-in-chief is, quote, "pretty sharp," unquote. Imagine the reaction from average Americans if, when asked about the nation's military readiness, General Brown said, "pretty good." The Biden camp is sending mixed signals about the man the rest of us know is not merely brain dead, but most sincerely brain dead. So, all the talk about removing Trump from state ballots for insurrection, without the government having to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt, or insisting his election will sound the death knell for American democracy, or that Trump will become emperor for life, which is sounding pretty good about now, or all the other silly, laughably over-the-top orange boogeyman fables, have failed to convince Americans that Joe Biden was ever deserving of a first term, let alone a second as president. The legal onslaught against Trump proves the 2024 presidential campaign will be the dirtiest in American history. In days past, one party's candidate slung dirt at the other party's candidate, and back again. But this year's election is very different, in that Trump stands alone while Republican Party hacks, Democratic Party hacks, the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, a corrupt Justice Department and judiciary, and even more corrupt fake news industry try to stop the American people from having an opportunity to vote for Trump. This they call democracy. Winston Churchill once described democracy as the worst form of government except for all the others. But Churchill never lived to see America's weaponized deep state version of democracy. the kind that attempts to imprison a candidate who threatens to undo the authoritarian policies of America's permanent, unelected rulers. Amazingly, Trump is unfazed by all of this and continues to give as good as he gets. And, as usual, his weapons of choice are sarcasm and ridicule. Mockery, you see, costs nothing. It's hard to fully quantify or defend against. And the wobbly Biden and his asshat promoters makes ridicule very easy for Trump. Dr. J. Michael Waller of NATO's Defense Strategic Communications Journal writes, quote, "Ridicule has received little attention in modern military thinking. The military is not supposed to be funny, but neither are diplomats or spies. Ridicule seldom, if ever, becomes a factor in military or diplomatic strategic planning, and rarely at the tactical or operational levels, even though many of our priority targets, large and small, are ripe for a good laugh." Unquote. The devil, the proud spirit, said Sir Thomas More, cannot endure to be mocked. Trump instinctually understands what the military calls psyops, or psychological operations, and his tactics seem to have coaxed the darkest elements of the deep state out from the shadows and into the bright noonday light for all to see, even the usually aloof Olympian gods of the U.S. Supreme Court. The sarcastic barbs Trump hurls Biden's way this presidential season will only increase the election interference efforts of a weaponized federal government that sees a second Trump presidency as its undoing. The 2024 race won't be pretty, but Trump will make it gloriously entertaining. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please leave a positive review on iTunes and subscribe. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.